This is Finally Alive Radio, where we discuss God, relationships, and you. Visit us at finallyaliveradio.com. That's finallyaliveradio.com. Now, let's listen to Gary Aris.
All right, let's go to Revelation chapter 20.
So on to our segue here, right?
And it's interesting, we've had an interesting kind of segue going through for a while here with starting, I guess, with Calvinism and Arminianism, that whole talk, and then getting into Bishop Carlson stuff. And the strange views that are there, taking us now to talks about hell, because that's, many don't believe that there is a hell. So I think that's worth talking about. I think it gets interesting. I think just looking at all the different verses about hell, well, we'll look at them. Let's just go there rather than me explaining it. But I think it's just an interesting segue here that we've made. So Revelation chapter 20, verse 14. And that says, and in fact, you know what I have here? I wrote down the King James version of it. I have my regular ESV also. Let me read it out of the King James for a second here. So verse 14 and 15 say, "And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire." ESV and NASB say it a little bit differently. So ESV says it in verse 14, "Then death and Hades," so not hell, but Hades, "were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death." And NASB actually add a little bit more to this. They add the word, "the lake of fire," after that. So it actually reads, in the Greek, I actually looked this up, it does actually say, "this is the second death, comma, the lake of fire," where I don't know why the King James doesn't have it. They probably are using a different manuscript. That's my guess. There's a couple of different manuscripts, the two major ones. The one that the King James one was using probably may not have had that part in it. I'm guessing. I don't know. But the one that I looked up did have the extra, "the lake of fire." I don't know if that's to be emphatic. Anyway, what version do you guys have? I think that's ESV there. Is that an ESV? Oh, yeah. So you guys both can see that, right? So verse 15, "And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire." So we have death, and then we have hell in the King James, but then we have Hades in ESV, NASB, NIV, I think it also said Hades, if I remember correctly. And then we have the lake of fire, just in these two verses here. So I grew up on hell being the place where there's a bunch of torment, fire and brimstone, right? That was hell. That's when I grew up, that's hell. But reading over it again right now, I'm thinking, okay, well, there's, okay, death, got it. Hell, okay, got it. And then there's a lake of fire. So then does that mean that hell, that there's a hot and hell and fire there, and then there's another fire at the lake of fire? Is that fire upon fire? I mean, what's happening there? I never really thought about that before, but then I'm like, wait a minute. What's going on here? So does that make sense? I don't know if most people haven't thought of that, right? And I think the key is we don't want to go to any of those, right? I mean, outside of the death, we can't escape death, but everything after that, the hell, Hades, lake of fire, call it what you will, I don't want to be in any of them, right? That's a good way to put it. But what we will do, of course, and this is what we always do on Thursday nights, is we will take it and rip it to shreds, not in a bad way, but rip it to shreds to see what the heck this all means, and to do our best to stay as accurate and as much as we can, according to the word, to really understand this. So I think that's the key thing, at least for me growing up. Here's my notion, is that the King James, though I love it and it's truly dear to my heart, I think there are moments like this that may throw us off because we already have this idea of hell. And then there's a lake of fire. So what's what here? So I guess that's the question for the moment here. So let's go Old Testament, of course. We have to go to the beginning. Let's start understanding what is going on here. Let's go, and we're going to jump around quite a bit. So I'm going to give you a whole ton of verses here to look at different verses here. So let's go to Job 26. I may not bring it up, but I'll bring it up now. So just in case I forget later. Remember, as we're reading out of different books, they're going to be different time periods, which might mean that they may have a different way of looking at what we're calling hell. All right? So Job 26, and this is what reminded me, is it's Job. Job is the oldest book that's written, right? But Job is actually somewhere in the midst of Genesis, right? I think they say it's around Noah's time is what I believe I've understood it to be. But just keep that in mind. Job is the oldest written book, or compared to, you know, Genesis or the Torah. So Job 26, I'm going to go to verse 1. And that said, "Then Job answered and said, 'How you have helped him who has no power, how you have saved the arm that has no strength, how you have counseled him who has no wisdom and plentifully declared sound knowledge. With whom help have you uttered words, and whose breath has come out from you? The dead tremble under the waters and their inhabitants. Sheol is naked before God.'" So that's verse 6. Now, if you have a King James, it says hell is naked before him. I'm actually choosing to use the word Sheol. Sheol, that's going to be a major one in the Old Testament. Sheol is naked before God, and Abaddon has no covering. I don't know if we'll see this word again. I can't think of the other verses, but we may. Abaddon, you see this in Revelations chapter 9, verse 11. This is the angel of death in the Hebrew tongue, Abaddon. So Abaddon, same name. It's back in those days, it was known as the place of destruction. All right, so that's the key thing to remember. And what is the angel of death do? Destruction, right? And it's typically referenced to a bottomless pit. So this is their understanding. This is the way that they understand this. So Abaddon has no covering. So it's interesting that Sheol and Abaddon, same sentence there. But it gives you a good picture. It gives you a really good picture of what Job's time, what they're thinking. Sheol, and I like how he says this, Sheol is naked before God, meaning we don't get it. We can't quite comprehend it, but God can see it all. Does that make sense? Sheol is naked before God, and Abaddon has no covering. So those two words I think are key. I'm going to write Abaddon loosely, I guess, because it all connects together here. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 9. I'm going to go to verse 13. So all we're doing is looking at different verses to get a clue on how they see this. So Proverbs 9:13, "The woman folly is loud. She is seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house. She takes a seat on the highest places of the town, calling it to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks sense, she says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol." So here's another kind of way to put it. So there's Sheol, and then there's the depths of Sheol. I think that's interesting. And again, we're gestalting, right? So are they looking at this as if there's Sheol, this place, and then the depths of Sheol, is it a deeper place? Is it lower than? Is it worse than? So are there levels to this? Okay, so we're just thinking here. But clearly the dead go there, right? I mean, I'll make it very simple. Clearly the dead go there, right? So Sheol is a place that the dead go. There was a verse I read today, Genesis. Do you guys remember off the top of your head when they sell Joseph? So Genesis 37, we'll go to Isaiah in a minute, but let's go to Genesis 37. We'll go to verse 31 for the sake of context. And it says, "Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in the blood." I'm not going to go too far because you guys know the story. "And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, 'This we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not.' And he identified it and said, 'It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces.' Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, 'No, I shall go down to,'" I think King James says, "the grave." It's the word Sheol. "'I shall go down to Sheol to my son, mourning.' Thus his father wept for him." So let's take the idea of what we understand as hell. Is Jacob saying that he is going to hell? Because it's the word Sheol. I didn't write this verse down, but I remember reading it earlier today. And that, I think, is interesting. So is it possible, Old Testament, that Sheol isn't quite the hell that we're thinking of that it is? And, or, I'll put it this way, because I think we're going to talk about this later on another time, or maybe next time, we'll see. Is Sheol a place, but then there's different places in Sheol? Okay, as we keep going, again, we're gestalting, but is there like a different levels of Sheol? Is there like the upper bunker and then everything else below and something of that sort? So I bring that up to cause, you know, some sort of thought going on because it's the exact same word, Sheol. So is Jacob in hell? I don't think he is. Huh? His own personal hell? Okay, yeah, that's a good way to put it, but is that what he means here? And it's an interesting word to use. I'm going to go to hell to go see my son. So wait, his son's in hell? So do you see? I think this is good to get us kind of thinking here. So I'll make it very clear. I don't think they're in hell. Let's make that very clear. But clearly, Sheol means something else. It doesn't mean hell and the hellfire that we're thinking. So we're just trying to get this understood here. So let's go to Isaiah chapter 14. So if it's not confusing enough yet, let's add some more confusion to it, right? But not for the sake of confusing you, but for the sake of, look at what Sheol means. It's a lot broader than what we think New Testament-wise. Now, we're not negating because clearly there is a lake of fire. So there is something that has fire. So we're not going to negate that. And everything is thrown into the lake of fire. So there's a clear-cut end to the whole show, right? The whole shebang, right? But we're going all the way to the beginning here. So it's going to be a little bit different in the beginning. I guess that's my point here. Isaiah 14, you guys there? And this is the old Lucifer chapter, right? So verse 3 says, "When the Lord has given you rest from your pain and turmoil and the hard service with which you were made to serve, you will take up this taunt against the king of Babylon." And here it is. Here's your taunt. "How the oppressor has ceased, the insolent fury ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of the rulers, that struck the peoples in wrath with unceasing blows, that ruled the nations in anger with unrelenting persecution. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. They break forth into singing. The cypresses rejoice at you, the cedars of Lebanon saying, 'Since you were laid low, no woodcutter comes up against us.' Sheol beneath is stirred up to meet you when you come." So another clue here for us. Where is Sheol? It's always beneath. I know it sounds silly, but let's just get all the facts right, right? Okay, so it's always below. It's always beneath. Sheol beneath is stirred up to meet you when you come. It rouses the shades to greet you. All who were leaders of the earth, it raises from their thrones, all who were kings of the nations. So it's interesting. Kings of nations, they know who they are. They're in Sheol, right? The ones obviously who don't believe in God, clearly. But so they're still rank in Sheol. Okay, so they still know. When you get to the other side, whatever rank you had here, apparently you must have it there. At least it follows you there. I'm not going to say that they're a king. I don't know if you want to be the king of Sheol, but at least the rank is still following you. I think that's interesting. Let's see here. Verse 10, is that where we're? "All of them will answer and say to you, 'You too have become as weak as we. You have become like us.'" So it's interesting. We have the kings, the thrones, all that. But then when you get to the other side, what happens? You're weak. "You're weak as all of us," is how he said it, right? "Your pomp is brought down to Sheol. The sound of your harps, maggots are laid as a bed beneath you, and worms are your covers." Not being a smart aleck, but how come the maggots and the worms aren't burning? If he's being literal. Okay, so that's just some thought, something to think about. Okay. So where's Sheol? Clearly under, beneath. This is a total side note, but just came to my mind. The way the ancient Israelite looked at the earth clearly isn't the way we look at it. So I prefer not to use the Bible as a scientific book. And this is why. Because I've learned that they don't see the world as we do. Meaning, they actually saw the world as flat. They believed the world was flat. Is the world flat? No, it's not. I don't care about the flat of society. God bless them, but they still exist. And they're huge. And looking at some of their research, Flat Earth Society people, there's a lot of Christians there because they believe some of the verses and they say, oh, see, well, the earth is flat. And they'll use Bible verses. I can't remember which ones, but they do. Again, God bless them, but science says different. I guess my take on this is, what if we don't use the Bible as a scientific book? What if we use it as a theological book? What if we did that? Because the entire story is God. That is the key of the book. It isn't to prove out science. It isn't made to prove out science. In fact, God doesn't care about proving out science because they're ancient people and their science is not our science today. All right? Their science was magic and stuff like that. We don't do that. right? Sure, there's traces of it, you know, but it's definitely not the same science. Clearly, it is not. So what if we use this book strictly as a theological book? What do you guys think of that? So I say that because there's a lot of people, if you guys are familiar with like young earth creationists and old earth, it's a big thing. Ken Ham, he's a young earth creationist. God bless him. The whole thing is they like to use Genesis 1 as literal days. Now, I don't know if it was. I don't know if it wasn't. So I'm not going to make any claim on that. But what if it isn't? Does that change my faith? Does that change your faith? No. I don't believe this, but let's, for the sake of argument, what if God did use evolution? What changes? Nothing changes. Jesus still came. Jesus still died on that cross. He resurrected, historically proven. And here we are. Now, I don't see enough evidence personally for evolution. I don't see it. But just for the sake of argument, what if it was? Oh, well, that makes the Bible a lie. No, it doesn't. If it's a theological book, it doesn't. It's not in the same camp. They're two different things. In a sense, so much for apologetics, so much for that. I'm not against apologetics. You guys know I love apologetics. But again, it's a theological book. Let's keep it there. Let's keep it in the... Because the whole point of the book is what? God. And then what? And his son. That's it. That's the key. And then what he does. That's it. That's the whole point of it. God. Centerpiece is God. What's page one to the last page? God. And then his son. That's it. That's the key thing. So I say that. I don't think that you guys have an issue with it, but I think it's important to be said that this is not a scientific book, and let's stop treating it like a scientific book. In fact, it's such a greater book than any science. So, in fact, it's the one who created all that, right? So, where were we? Let's go back to Job. And again, we're going to jump around here. And I mentioned that because they saw the earth as flat, and pretty much all they saw was there's the ground beneath, the underground, there's us, there's the heavens above us, and then where the quote-unquote gods are. That's it. That's as simple as that. That's all they knew. Where the firmament was, that's all they know. But from their perspective, without any telescopes and things of that sort, that's all you know. Wasn't bad. I think it's important to realize that God spoke to them on their level, where they were, and what they understood. God didn't have to teach them anything extra. He spoke their language so that they understood. Holy wasn't a new word. It's a word that they use for other things. Jesus, Paul, adopts it too for Christianity, the New Testament. Old Testament, same thing. He adopts it because they already know what this is. So, but let's use it now for my purpose, from God's perspective, right? So God isn't doing anything new there. He's using what they know and how much they know. And that's kind of a genius thing to do, because I think the story would be way different if God showed up or God started speaking to people now today with what we know and how we think. Way different than back, I don't know, I'm ranting now, but just a thought. I think it would be a whole different story, but obviously God's perfect and he knows exactly what he's doing. I guess my thought is, I think he appears to them back then for the sake of giving you just enough. John, perfect guy to give you the book of Revelation, right? I'll give you just enough, right? If he gave it to Paul, oh my gosh, imagine the details. The book of Revelation would probably be as big as the Bible. If he gave it to Paul, but he gave it to John, and I think I see this. That's the best words I can use. The guy's a simple dude. Perfect guy to pick to write the book of Revelations to still keep the mystery for the right purpose. Anyway, there's my rant for you for the day. All right, Job 10, verse 18. Here's some more lamenting. Job 10, 18. Why did you bring me out from the womb? Would that I had died before an eye had seen me, and were as though I had not been, carried from the womb to the grave. Are not my days few? Then cease and leave me alone, that I may find a little cheer before I go, and shall not return to the land of darkness and deep shadow. What is he talking about? That's their version of Sheol. The land of darkness and deep shadow. That's our version of hell. The shadow of death. That's hell for them, okay? That's the grave. And notice he used the word grave earlier. So be aware of these things. The land of gloom, like thick darkness, like deep shadow without any order, where light is as thick darkness. That's Job's version or take on Sheol. Okay, let's look at Psalm 88. So a lot of flashing lights down there? Nope. Darkness, like a thick cloud. You can't see anything. If we can attempt to think of it from their perspective, darkness is a problem, right? To us, it isn't, because we have lights on all the time. But darkness is a problem for them. I can't see. From I can't see where I'm going to I can't see if there's an enemy. Does that make sense? It's a problem. It's a hindrance. Look at how they apply it to Sheol. It's dark. It's the worst place. It's the worst situation you can be in. You're the most vulnerable, right? So Psalm 88, you guys there? Go to verse 1. O Lord, God of my salvation, I cry out day and night before you. Let my prayer come before you. Incline your ear to my cry. For my soul is full of troubles, and my life draws near to Sheol. It looks like that's where everyone thinks that they're going. Well, at least that's probably where they're going. I'll put it that way. King James uses the word grave. It's not a bad word, but I think it's interesting. Just to mental note there. Grave and Sheol. All right, so they've made that connection there. My life draws near to Sheol. I am counted among those who go down to the pit. Notice again, they're going down. I am a man who has no strength, like one set loose among the dead, like the slain that lie in the grave, like those whom you remember no more, for they are cut off from your hand. You have put me in the depths of the pit. So what is the Sheol again? Look at the words that he's using to describe Sheol. So far we've got dark, it's a thick cloud, right? Can't see, and it's a place far, far away, right? Like those you remember no more, for they are cut off from your hand. You have put me in the depths of the pit. Yet again, the depths, it's a deep place. In the regions, dark and deep. Yet again, it's dark. You can't see, it's deep. Your wrath lies heavy upon me, and you overwhelm me with all your waves. And again, we're just looking at what is Sheol? How do they see Sheol? Let's look at go to verse 9. My eyes grow dim through sorrow. Every day I call upon you, O Lord. I spread out my hands to you. Do you work wonders for the dead? Do the departed rise up to praise you? Is your steadfast love declared in the grave, or your faithfulness in Abaddon? Here's your Abaddon again. Are your wonders known in the darkness? Are your righteousness in the land of forgetfulness? So notice, that's the place where you're forgotten. Okay, so notice all these things. It's interesting. But I, O Lord, cry to you in the morning. My prayer comes before you. O Lord, why do you cast my soul away? Why do you hide your face from me? I think that's probably the best representation right there. Sheol is the place where I cannot see God's face. Great way to put it. In a nutshell, right? I mean, I don't think that's like the way he's characterizing it, but that's probably the best way we can interpret quote-unquote hell. So far, we haven't seen much fire, right, when we talk about Sheol. But it's a bad place. Why? It's dark and it's away from God. That's a problem. You guys see this so far? I mean, so far nothing about fire, right? And what was interesting here in this specific couple of verses here, it sounded like it was a place so far away and you can't be risen back from that place. That's an important piece. Once you go there, there's no coming back. There's no way you can come back. That's what he said a couple of verses ago. So just notice these verses. So let's go to Psalm 22. So dark. Jeez, I didn't mean it to get so dark, guys, but yeah, we are talking about hell. What do you expect? This is the famous verse, Psalm 22, verse 1. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I find no rest. What is he describing? He's describing a place that's far away from God. I think there's no mystery why Jesus uses these verses. He's far away from God. That connection that he had, he was losing on that cross. And what a great kind of segue for, not a segue, but a great segue, I guess, for Christ to use that verse to say, I'm going there. I'm going to that damned place, Sheol. The place where you're forgotten, the dark place, the nasty place, right? Can we use the word cursed place? It didn't say it that way, but we can use that for the sake of the idea. Well, go to chapter 94. I know we're skipping around, but it's all kind of the same book, so we'll go there again. Psalm 94, verse 8. Understand, O dullest of the people, fools, when will you be wise? He who planted the ear, does he not hear? He who formed the eye, does he not see? He who disciplines the nations, does he not rebuke? He who teaches man knowledge, the Lord knows the thoughts of man, that they are but a breath. Blessed is the man whom you discipline, O Lord, and whom you teach out of your law, to give him rest from days of trouble until a pit is dug for the wicked. For the Lord will not forsake his people. He will not abandon his heritage, for justice will return to the righteous. And all the upright in the heart will follow it. Who rises up for me against the wicked? Who stands up for me against the evildoers? If the Lord had not been my help, my soul would soon have lived in the land of silence. Yet again, another clue here. This is the worst of the worst, right? Do you see how they describe it? We describe it as bad because it's hellfire. But the way they describe Sheol is it's dark, you can't see, it's bad, and I can't even hear that it's silent, deathly silent. Isn't that interesting? It's such a different picture than at least what I grew up with. Hell was, you can't stop hearing it, right? It's always going on and everyone's screaming. That's what I saw in the movies, right? That's what you see in the movies. But it's interesting the way they describe it. Sheol, it's silent. There's no sound there. Let's go on to, since we're in Psalm, let's go to chapter 9. We're going to go back to Job right after this. Psalms chapter 9. We'll go to verse 11. Sing praises to the Lord who sits enthroned in Zion. Tell among the people his deeds. For he who avenges blood is mindful of them. He does not forget the cry of the afflicted. Be gracious to me, O Lord. See my affliction from those who hate me. O you who lift me up from the gates of death. And it's interesting, that why would they use the word gates? It's the idea of a gate. Gates of, gates of death. Why gates? What does a gate do? You guys know what a gate does. So it sounds like there's something that keeps it out or keeps it in, right? Almost like a wall, right? Okay, keep that in mind. Let's go to Job chapter 38. It's interesting when you kind of lump all these verses together, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm starting to see this weird picture of this creepy place. And remember, this is all pre-Jesus, right? So that I think makes a difference. So Job 38, verse 14, it is changed like clay under the seal. Verse 15, from the wicked their light is withheld and their uplifted arm is broken. Have you entered into the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? What is it with the gates? It's the same idea as once you're in, you're not coming out. You're stuck there. It's a gate. Nothing comes in, nothing comes out, unless the gate is open, right? So do you see the pictures that they're painting of this horrible place? Sheol, that place you go, you never come back. There's no way back. In fact, when you're there, I can't see God's face anymore. It's a problem. Is it hellfire? No, and so far it isn't. We didn't get any of those yet, thus far, right? But it's dark. Can't see, right? Silent. And then there's a gate. Because you can't get out of this place. You're stuck there. Do you guys remember when we read Enoch? Gosh, it was like a year or two ago. And Enoch is going between God and the, not the Nephilim, but basically the sons of God. Do you guys remember that part? I'll kind of paraphrase what I remember. So here's the bad guys. We'll call them the bad guys, right? Enoch, can you talk to God to get us out of this place? We hate this place. There's got to be a way out. Enoch goes back, tells God. God says, nope, you stay there until I say so. He goes back and says, sorry, guys. He said, you're stuck here until he says so. The gates. No one can open the gates, but who can open the gates? God can open the gates. I think that's a cool little piece to the puzzle there. But they don't seem to see that, or at least they don't know that. I don't know what it is. But once you're in there, you can't come back out. You're stuck there. And that's Sheol, right? Let's see here. Let's go to one last one. We'll go to Isaiah 38, and we'll continue on with more Sheol stuff next time here. Isaiah 38, and I won't go too far into this, but it's the same idea. Isaiah 38, verse 9, read verse 8. Behold, I will make the shadow cast by the declining sun and the dial of Ahaz turn back 10 steps, verse 9. A writing of Hezekiah, king of Judah, after he had been sick and had recovered from his sickness. I said, in the middle of my days, I must depart. I am consigned to the gates of Sheol for the rest of my years. Only reason why I read that is notice we went to three different places. We went to Job, Psalms, and Isaiah. Three different places, three different time periods. And they all see it as a gate. There's these gates. All right. I think that's important to realize. There's gates, darkness, silent, horrible place. It's a horrible place to be. All right. So what do you guys think so far? What the heck happened, right? You can't go into the Garden of Eden, similar to how you can't get out of hell or Sheol. So I even have to kind of retrain myself not to say hell. I'm so used to saying hell, but Sheol, yeah. Does this leave you more confused than you came in? And I'll say this, what we believe, I don't think is that far off. It's just a slight adjustment. I think that's the only thing, based on what we understand about hell thus far, this is what I'm understanding, because clearly there is fire. No question about that. And it says that a couple times. So I'm not going to doubt the fire part. I am curious where the fire aspect comes in, and we'll touch on that as we go down this journey here, because there is other, you know, kind of fiery talk, New Testament, and we'll get there.
Thank you for listening to Finally Alive Radio. If God has touched your heart with any part of today's message, let Gary know by contacting him on finallyaliveradio.com. Would you like to download this episode for free? Now you can. finallyaliveradio.com has every episode ready for download absolutely free. We'll meet you again next time when we look at God's Word with your very own Christian counselor, Gary Aris, and learn how to finally be alive in Christ.